Podcastle, episode 524, for May 29th, 2018. Shine Like the Sea's Deepest Secrets, by Catherine McMahon. Rated R. Welcome to Podcastle. I'm your host, Setsu Uzume. Today's episode, Shine Like the Sea's Deepest Secrets, was originally published in Flame Tree's gothic fantasy anthology, Pirates and Ghosts. In case you've been living under a rock that isn't deep under the sea, it's Mermaid! Artists of all stripes have been posting gorgeous, weird, hilarious, and frightening merfolk art across social media. Definitely worth a look if you have a merminute. For our own contribution, we offer this deep, dark tale by Catherine McMahon. Catherine McMahon is an American living abroad with her British wife and dog. Her stories have appeared or are forthcoming in places such as Syntax and Salt and the Cincinnati Review, as well as in the food and horror anthology Sharp and Sugartooth, Women Up to No Good. Among other adventures, she's been in quicksand twice, camped in a bat-filled cave, and steered a tall ship. But mostly, she just likes to read. On Twitter, she is at Catascope, and find more of her writing at darkandsparklystories.com. Today's narrator is our own Khalida Muhammad Ali. Khalida Muhammad Ali lives in Houston, Texas, with her husband and three children. By day, she works as a breast oncology nurse. At all other times, she juggles none too successfully writing, reading, gaming, and gardening. She has written one novel titled An Unproductive Woman, and she has also been published or has stories upcoming in Escape Pod, Diabolical Plots, and Faya. Khalida also co-edits Podcastle.org, which you knew already, where she's on a mission to encourage more women to submit fantasy stories. Of her alter ego, Kay from the planet Vega, it is rumored that she owns a time machine and knows the secret to long youth. She can be found online at Khalida.com and on Twitter at Khalida. Now get ready, because it's cold down there. Take a deep breath, jump in, and enjoy the story.
Shine Like the Sea's Deepest Secrets, by Catherine McMahon. A shadow passes overhead, and mermaids rise from where they are playing hide-and-seek among the jellyfish. It has been weeks since they fed. If the shadow is a whale, the mermaids will only wish it safe passage. But the shadow is a galleon. Is it the one I'm looking for? I rush upwards. The sky is noon bright, the air still. The ship's main mast, cracked and scorched by lightning, lays toppled. Torn sails flutter on the fore and mizzen masts. The ship has been left to drift at the whim of the current. Mermaids crawl up the hull and cling to barnacles. Their voices, which usually hiss like the breaking waves, bend to wordless song. Lured by their music, sailors peer over the rail, their faces gaunt, their gums rotted. No matter. The mermaid's sharp teeth will slice bone and reach the marrow. As the mermaids sing, I linger in the water and try to mimic them. My bubbles are quietly stolen by the frothing waves. Mermaids spy my efforts and say not to worry. They will eat the man who killed my lover. I tell them that this is not his ship, but they are hungry. Sailors close their eyes in ecstasy. Some fling themselves overboard, and mermaids dive after them. A few bites, the intestines unravel in the waves like loose mooring rope. Hammerheads join the feast, much braver than other sharks when facing mermaid appetites. As the sailors die, they see me, one apparition to another. Yet they do not stay long. like the captain I lost so long ago. They promise themselves to the blue devil and are soon washed away in a spectral tide. Except for the mermaids, I am alone. I died before my captain, gutted by the same Spanish sword. Those who feared my lover called her Sadie the Axe. She captained the Sea Rose, though some knew it as the disgrace of the waves. Her body lies among the sea feathers, so like the plume of her tricorn hat now lost to the depths. A hat she wore as she claimed the deck and prepared for siege. A hat that rested beside our bed every night when I would pull her into my arms and beg her to find her way back to dry land. But she was free beneath the black sails. The water is thick with blood, but all the useful bits of flesh have been swallowed. The mermaids retreat, pot-bellied, to languish on the sea floor. I drift down to where they flirt and giggle with the rose's figurehead. It was carved to look something like them, but mostly like me. Down here, both noon and sun are inked out, and the mermaid's eyes reflect what stars abound, the living sapphires that hunt each other and twinkle in and out of sight. I see the spirit of eyes. If I still had a heart, I would feel like I belonged to these glittering creatures. But my heart was eaten by a red crab, and I belong to no one. So instead of wishing on stars, I wish on the night beasties for the death of the man who murdered my sea wife and me. The mermaids, those eternal creatures, call me Pandora. I never stray far from the chest of silver and gold that, like a dead heart, curdles between the ribs of the rose where her halves lie on the shivering undercrust of the sea. Sadie stole the rose from her own marauding father, who then claimed it had sunk in a storm. That was only half a lie. Sadie was a storm of a woman. Her crew was loyal. So was I, though she'd kidnapped me from my own merchant ship. Bounty, I think she called me. I don't remember my real name. The mermaids hear me weeping and mock me. Next time, they call laughing. How often have they said that? And they scarcely eat, unless their meals happen upon them. I kick the chest, my foot passing straight through, and they laugh harder. Sometimes when the mermaids are too annoying, I float up and search the horizon for the poisoned sails of the galleon I will one day take down. And when the mermaids tease, I don't tell them if danger is near. Something large streams overhead, a minke whale, her belly distended. The mermaids sing, ushering her towards shallow birthing waters. It is too deep for her here, too dark, and with too many places for sharp beaks to hide. Even as I think it, midnight tentacles curl over a ridge and rise toward the whale. She is a faint gray pinch that disappears behind the kraken's languid tent. The mermaids high in the splintered ship, their eyes raised to the new night. I have no fear for my chummed-up body, and, as a spirit, what nourishes could I offer this beast? But near the chest lie my captain's bones scraped clean of life. When Sadie's body broke the surface, I followed her down and chased away the mermaid's hungry tails, which irritatingly amused them. I could not guard against the crabs and shrimp tugging her apart, or the bone worm that slid down her throat. I hate the sea. I never promised myself to it, only to her. So even now I stand watch as Sadie's spine rattles in her fear-not jacket. I have lost her almost entirely. The kraken is the blackest black, a shadow to shadows. How I wish it would swallow me. I am so cold here. Another anger warms me when the whole ocean is pressing down. I cannot sing. and justice for Sadie feels no closer than the moon. Frustration and rage spark inside me. The sea begins to glow. Scattered doubloons shimmer. Half-buried ruby rings flare red. Sadie's sword flashes as it did against the blade of the one that slew her. I gleam like the sea constellations. The kraken pauses in its ascent, arms and clubs hovering black against black. The whale keeps swimming. The kraken does not pursue her, but falls like a shroud over the ship's remains. Its bone china eyes are the size of carriage wheels. Can this night creature consume me? I am unnerved and my glow dims, yet I stand firmly between the beast and Sadie. It shows no interest in her pile of bones. A tentacle dances toward me. My light illuminates nothing of the kraken. No details of flesh, no shades of darkness, though I can see fine grains of sand in each ripple of the ocean floor. How do you make it night? The question is in my head, a whisper so small I would have thought it my own if the beast's flat stare was not fixed on me. And how does one answer a monster? Do they only understand more monstrosity? I am full of hate. Even as I say it, I know it to be more than that. The kraken stares with eyes of spinning milk. I think of all the strands of pearls I've counted to mark my days, all of the endless nights spent dreaming of revenge. My voice will never soak the seas, and I do not want to waste more time spitting bubbles at fish. Could the kraken prove more useful than the mermaids? It is larger, faster, hungrier. I will show you how to glow, if you help me. I do not say how. It might even be a lie, yet hope trickles through me. Have I not seen octopus and squid writing illusions on their parchment skin to foil predators and capture prey? Surely the kraken is like its cousins. I am a merchant's daughter, and before swords, words were the tools of my trade. So I drag a net of curiosity over the beast. Like mermaids who compel down their fare, you will lure your dinner. No more near misses. No more lonely shadows. What would you have me do? There is a ship. I tell the kraken of tasty meals floating just out of reach in vessels made of landweed. Think of the shoals of corpses and others driven up from the depths on which you will feed. If you have the right disguise, show me. I close my eyes, a habit left over from life. I imagine the face of the man who killed me. Imagine driving my cutlass into his chest and up to its emerald jeweled hilt before he has a chance to slaughter Sadie. My hand glows. Rage ignites my fingertips. I press these to the kraken's tentacle, through it. It jolts in surprise but does not retract. Am I cold? Hot? Silver threads weave from my hand into the tentacle. I step into its gyrating suckers. Their tiny teeth needle me in an echo of pain. Then light spreads up its arm to the mantle and through the rest of its body. The kraken's eyes flash gold. The monster is a fiery liquid mirror reflecting the rose behind me. Drained, I pull away, and if a ghost should stumble, I would. The kraken falls dark. Then it rolls its tentacles and flickers. Stars emerge across its surface like the diamond necklaces Sadie once draped over me after a raid. The kraken is no longer an abyss empty of light, but shines like the sea's deepest secrets. The kraken disintegrates into a pile of rocks. matte rubble against the press of black. "What else can you do?" I ask. Its skin shimmers and stretches, then the rocks rupture into bright coral and anemones, a tropical reef on the bottom of the sea. I laugh. The kraken shivers. In pleasure? Then its skin wrinkles and smooths into pale blue, a whale so great it might fill the ocean. The kraken has become one of its own prey. It is unnatural and yet more natural than anything I know. My father was determined I would grow to love the sea if I sailed it long enough. Sadie, too, spoke of the ocean's wild pull. They were wrong. It was the blue devil whispering in their ears. In the deep ocean, sound is lumpy and untethered. I can barely make out the crack and splash of cannon fire miles away. I glance at the shipwreck where mermaids yawn and turn to the kraken. You must be hungry. It ripples like water itself and breaks into shards of mirror. Each sucker is an empty silver bowl I have promised to fill. I concentrate and grip its mantle. If I can blow bubbles, then I can hold on to the kraken's slippery mass. It jets upward. As we rise, marine stars wink out and the sea is infused with crimson. Sunset rims the kraken's eyes. We surface. I gasp for air, though it won't fill me. These compulsions die long after the body does. I cannot even touch the wind as it drives the waves and dashes them to foam. There are no clouds to echo back the boom of cannons. The setting sun is blotched by the masts and square sails of ships jostling with each other. I cannot see the flags they fly, yet one ship has a familiar girth, 580 tons, 4 masts and 32 cannons. The Spaniard's galleon, my father's, the one who murdered me and my mate, then sunk the Rose. The kraken is pink with sky, its eyes mirror suns. You must disguise yourself. I don't think even you can withstand a cannon's blast. Its brilliant skin turns as clear as water. Perfect. I quash the instinct to hide. Now go. The kraken cuts straight to the battle. The Spanish ship is indeed my father's merchant vessel, Nuestra Señora de la Fortuna, half-crewed by Armada men. I was once proud of its flags before I left the chains of daughterhood. I cannot summon even one morsel of regret. Instead, my rage flows hot as blood. The other ship is leaner and built for speed. Its lettering reads Razor of the Tides, and the teeth of its skull-faced flag chomp swords. Every flick of the wind is another bite. Gunpowder chars the air, yet Spanish cannonballs have not breached the Razor's hull. Just as well. The pirates did not kill my Sadie. I bear them no malice. But no one on La Fortuna tried to stop my father from killing me. I point to it. The cannons will not harm you if you pull the ship under. The kraken curls a tentacle into smoke. I cross it beneath thundering waves to where pirates have tied small boats. Ropes dangle where the ship has been boarded. I weigh nothing, and yet it is an effort to pull myself up the line. Swells gush through me. I almost slip off from exhaustion. Do I really want to do this? My rage wavers like a candle flame. Yes! I hold on to the rope. I have nothing else left. La Fortuna's crew shouts as smoke coils up from below. I reach the deck awash in blood and sea spray. Sharks must be near, if not the mermaids wary of the kraken. My father is fighting. He holds my cutlass, the emeralds almost black in the growing night. How can he bear to use my sword? Had I simply become another pirate? He stabs his opponent's belly as he did mine. The pirate slumps, so he grabs his lapel and thrusts him down to the circling fins. Lucky man, the pirate dies before he hits the water. His soul rises past me and blinks out. There is no moon. Smoke lies heavily over the ship. Some have stopped fighting to squint up at the strange rings that blush with cannon fire. Then the smoke shimmers and solid night collapses over the deck. The Kraken's tentacles crush wood and tangle rigging. Pirates retreat to their grappling hooks and boats below, followed by desperate soldiers. The Kraken slurps out of the water and snaps away La Fortuna's masts. Decks shudder as the beast heaves itself fully on board. Perhaps it does not want to share with the sharks. My father lowers his weapon and clutches at the rail. His face is ragged from sun and salt, his hair nearly gray. And he is not looking at the Kraken. He is looking at me. I am shining. Around me fog memories of the night I died. Cold rain that slashed our faces. La Fortuna blasting away at the sea rose. My father shouting for the disgrace of the waves. Shouting for... No. That was not what he called the ship. That was what he called me. He boarded the Rose and sought me out, his beard matted with rainwater, his shouts of betrayal knifing my bowels as I stood tall and faced him, as I do now. Estefania. My name. It is another kind of blade. I can brim with light. I can transform a monster. I can seize my revenge. My cutlass. His eyes widen as I take the edge. I barely feel its sharpness. It cannot hurt me. I am full of grief, and that hurts. But I don't know what else to do. The ocean is so cold. I am so alone. My father has gone pale beneath my shine, even as he holds the hilt. I guide the tip of the sword up to a gap between his ribs. He sweats, fighting and shaking, trying to rip it from my grasp. Full of light, I am stronger. I impale him. He half tumbles, half slides, over the blood, his own and others. Now, as before, he looks at me with disappointment. His eyes tremble closed. His soul claws its way out of his body and vanishes. Promised to the Blue Devil. So he has no regrets, and he will see Sadie before me. I burn luminous with hurt. May I sizzle away into nothing. The Kraken is snatching soldiers and pirates alike to funnel into a gaping, crunching maw beneath its hulk. The Razor speeds away with new crew to replace those recently eaten. What living are left behind on La Fortuna throw themselves at the sea, only to be scooped up by the Kraken. It cannot enthrall them as the mermaids do, and they die wide-eyed with terror, their souls extinguishing in bursts. All this death, I have done this, and for what? It will not bring Sadie back. I have never felt so much pain. I reach for my cutlass and pull it stiffly from its flesh. It is warm where my father held it, warm where his blood congeals along the blade. I hurl it into the sea, where it will be mine forever. The Kraken looks at me. I nod. A tentacle reaches down and wraps around my father. His body disappears into the beast. The wind dwindles away and the ship falls silent. The Kraken's eyes are twin moons and it glows softly, sated. A false mirror of my destruction. Despite everything, La Fortuna remains afloat, another ghost ship left to the mercy of the sea. Perhaps I am not so alone. Stars are shrapnel above and below, and in my heart, the Blue Devil whispers.
And welcome back. It's gonna get a little dense, so just bear with me. Before TVTropes.org, there was the field of folkloristics, in which hobbyists and academics studied motifs, or recurring elements in stories. Cultural anthropologists also looked at motifs in music, literary criticism, visual arts, and textile arts, and extrapolated what they saw in order to get a picture of a people's stories. Professor Gunter Schmidtchen, what a name, right, introduced me and my folklore class to the S. Thompson Motif Index. Halfway through the quarter of reading tales and categorizing common characters and situations, the students started bringing tea and chocolate spread and homemade madeleines as though in surrender to the folklore spirits themselves. These stories have a way of digging into us in ways we can't always predict. But when it comes to B53.0.1, siren in mermaid form, or B81, woman with the tail of a fish who lives in the sea, which is distinct from B81.0.1, which is a fish in the water and a human on land, there's been so much analysis that much of this has been written off as butterfly collecting. But without the analysis, we fall into the trap of accepting a single story as representative of the whole. In rebellion against the largest, loudest stories, it can be a struggle to find a fresh take, especially when those takes, such as B81.9.3, Mermaid is half beautiful, half monstrous, or B81.4, Mermaid captures a maiden, or B81.9.5.2, Mermaid has brown skin, or B82, Merman, have already been categorized. There will always be structural, moralistic, feminist, psychoanalytic, and literary lenses through which to view these stories. I hope you find the lenses that work best for you and continue to try new ones on every now and then. That was our show for this week. On behalf of everyone here at Podcastle, our audio engineer Peter Baravesh, our forum moderator Aussie Cat, and your co-editors Jen Albert and Khalida Muhammad Ali, along with all of our slushers, Aidan Doyle, Crystal Claxton, Matt Dovey, Eleanor Wood, Stephanie Cox, Devin Martin, Elora Gatz, Julia Pat, Hamilton Perez, Naru Sundar, and Suyi Davies Okumboa, thanks for letting us share another story with you. Be sure to share it with your friends, hit us up on social media, and if you would like to show some extra love, head to patreon.com/EAPodcasts and feed the pod for special events, bonus episodes, and Podcastle appearances in the wild. We'll be back next week with another tale. See you then.